Hi, thank you very much for inviting me to Paul from Fab and Stephen. I knew that. Hi, I'd like to start. Yeah, it's probably a good idea. Okay, some of these I've never read aloud before, well, to anybody outside of myself, so I've said that before, but anyway, here it goes. The first one's called Three Things. You can all hear me. Three things that keep secure: my life, my truth, my boys. As I contemplate the surface of the lake, three things I long to lose: my doubts, my fears, their lies. And so I dive. Through underwater gloom, pike eyes find me, their torn mouths lipstick stained. Make no mistake, three things I keep secure: my life, my truth, my boys. Four times, pike bit through my cries, dive my heart ink black, hands fish scaled, tattooed till I ache to lose three things at last: my doubts and my fears, their lies. I cannot keep or lose it all, nor mollify the pike whose teeth grow from clenched fists. For their sake, these things I've kept secure: my life, my truth, my boys. For even when they're dead, razor toothed pike will try to swallow whole, attempt to gut their prey, to rake through things I long to lose: my doubts, my fears, their lies. Lock it down inside ink stains, sketch it inside joy, so when the pike swims close, he'll never ever take three things I've kept secure: my life, my truth, my boys. Just things I long to lose: my doubts, my fears, their lies. Cell phone. This is for Peter. I cup your voice to my ear, your warming breath against my skin. You hold my hand, though you're not here. You tell me not to let my fears stalk every step back to my kin, to cup your voice to my ear. This narrow world is squeezed with tears, as stove-hat ghouls stick dolls with pins. You hold my hand, though you're not here. Cut. Emptied hearts a linen jeer at dancing headless mannequins. I cup your voice to my ear, and tell you how the night's laid bare, as though the world is pulsed with sin. You hold my hand, though you're not here. I reach my goal, no longer care that watchmen bar the hallowed inn. I cup your voice to my ear. You hold my hand when you're not here. This is a freaky little number, and I like it because it's a freaky little number. It's called Learning to Speak Without a Tongue. A living poet leaned against the counter of my dreams, arms folded spread across his chest. Watch this, he said, and from every room he summoned all my childhood selves, and they came running through every door. This is how we do it, he said. I watched in horror as my childhood selves began to mow each other down, bit on freckled faces, drag themselves, my childhood selves, down to hell. I tried to call their names, but saw my tongue was in his hand, which he then began to eat. I like this. There was a fundraiser for the Ornalai, and the guy told me this story, and I thought it was just such an amazing story, that hymns are sung every year to ward off a legend that Kilmore Town will be sunk unless they sing these ancient hymns. Mm-hmm. You know it? No? It's called Songs of the Sea. At Kilmore Town, ancient carols are sung. Legend says the sea will drown their town. Casting stones into the sea is wrong. Storm-crested waves drag silent sail down. Legend says the sea will drown their town. A silver coin beneath the mast brings luck. Storm-crested waves drag silent sail down. Church bells sound when sinking ships are struck. A silver coin beneath the mast brings luck. True to say, what the sea wants, it gets. Church bells sound when sinking ships are struck. A curlew's flight makes fair wind sailors fret. True to say, what the sea wants, it gets. Casting stones into the sea is wrong. A curlew's flight makes fair wind sailors fret. At Kilmore Town, ancient carols are sung. This is called Someone Tell Me. Someone Tell Me. Have you ever found yourself having flown safely, suddenly, contrarily, transported to the front seat of your brother's car, or your childhood selves crying in the back seat, demanding attention, while the car is out of control, ice skidding down and around unspoken grief? Have you? Have you ever noticed how the embossed paper rolled in the sick room is a living, moving, breathing thing that absorbs all thought, nighttime, blood, ash trees, old oaks, firsts, lasts, the moon, a parent? How the days of your life are written on those walls. How this day fails to be a blue-lit sun-skied place. Oh, have you? Have you ever found yourself huddled with your brothers and sisters in a vaulted doorway, watching sepia imageries roll down the street, pulling the seat from your eyes, but still, any talk of your father's illness fills the space with a falling down, skidding out of control, orphaned childhood panic? Well, have you? I need you to tell me, please. Okay, another freaky number. And this is not about my mother-in-law, and you can edit that from at all.
You had to take that out.
Afternoon tea. Afternoon tea, 4 p.m. in her lair. Polish, gilt, flare, all illusion. Decay reeking on her breath, the air besmirched by her rot. Inclined to better view her clawed feet, she strings the tea through your deaf ear. A drip drop, drumming through your skull. You look away but catch your eye double blinking in your hand, roll it to and fro. Used pipe teeth form her iris. Her reflections sneer and mock you. Wrung out, she mops a spill with her freshly laundered beating heart. Her brew is full of lies. Made yours now too, but sifted through your life, remember? Time to go. A photograph before you leave, my dear. Your soul snapped and framed. Breathing lessons. Can you breathe better now? She sucks all the air from your lungs and binds you in her purple vice of demands. Hold still. Let me drive this rusty nail through your breast and scratch a hex on your heart. Can you breathe better now? You don't need this arm. It's greedy, selfish of you to want to. Let me twist it off. Let me sew you in half. You were never whole anyway. See how I help you, doll? Can you breathe better now? Prelude. It has the soft, raw edge of an open wound. I touch the keys and the music holds me earthbound. Along the passage a rustle of silk as the shadows whistle, and the moon sighs as the dead return. This is the title poem. It's called The Shadow Owner's Companion. We live in a kind of spooky house, and it's easy to write spooky poems, but this particular shadow hangs around. It's called the Shadow Owner's Companion. Solitary. She's been around for so long now, we simply coexist. I know she's there. At night, she rocks in the left corners of our bedroom, her chair held together by my fear of the dark. She stays there, mostly, in the dark. Sometimes she sleeps at the bottom of the lake. She wakes me in my dreams and I ignore her. But then she does her special trick. Hovers just above me, her weight not on me. I spoon up to you, and frightened I say, mind me, and you warn me not to tell my dreams, they frighten you too. I won't look at her. I know she could never be unseen, unheard of, forever and ever. And my son and I have very different work ethics. I work, he doesn't. we lock horns and we fight, but he's a sweetie really. And he gave me glowstone because of my fear of the dark. and I have it by my bed. It's in the gauze shoot that's turned upside down, so it's cradled. So when I wake up at night, it blows. And actually, it's not really comforting. It's just like an eye in the middle of the room. But I haven't told him that. So he gave me a glowstone, and I gave him a sonnet. He thinks he didn't do too well out of that exchange. But that's okay, because I'm his mother, and I'm allowed. Glowstone for George. Hurtling past noonday's unmade fields, past all those wasted hours further back the same train, getting up to find you, a stricken trawl through storybook days, damped with fretful rain. The same train that your car grappled back to yesterday. I managed just to ravel time as it spliced my knee to nurture you. How could I let this happen and travel down the same lines as my parents? Listen to me, child. This is not the worst. Please allow a moment for atonement. We'll snatch a piece of nevermore, but first, entrust me with that glowstone, love, to creel for night the light of day, a moonday steel. On the lifeboat, we go into all sorts of conditions. We had a tragedy last week, but this isn't about that, it's about another one. And as we saw the person in the water, I said to the crew around me, I think I'm nervous. I'm not ready for this. And they said, you're going to be fine. But I wasn't. And you know, when you see something, it just sits behind your eyelids. And every time you close your eyes, and the first thing they say to us on the lifeboat is never look at somebody's face, because then you identify them as a person. And I just couldn't take my eyes off his face. So it was difficult. So I wrote this poem, and it was like an exorcism. I don't dream about it anymore. It's fine. Anyway, you don't need to know about it. That's what it's about. It's called recovery. He's overdue. That's all we know. As the lifeboat tugs the reins of snow-blown steeds, crew take each new wave in a rising trot. The rhythmic pitch of our engine's blade is the sound of hope in tortured air. Overhead, the sky lies low with blame, seeking solace in the speckled mirror of the lake. We search the run and flow of current winds, racing points on our compass. Very soon we find his skiff, holed and broken by the gales. And then, close by, we find him too, drowned, alone and still. We stop and bow our heads, all silent now, even the wind has stilled its breathy will. But this is no Ophelian scene, there are no fragrant flowers here. February insists on monochromes of brown and ash, with wintered reeds and loch his own cradle. Guns cut it from this life, grey lake infused, a waxen absence dyes his face and hands, his eyes. We break our gaze overboard into this other scene we slide, to gather up, tender to the last of rites. I can't find a funny, happy poem. Okay, Lethiometer. It comes from Philip Pullman's, his Dark Materials. And the lethiometer is the compass that Lyra uses as a truth teller. I think it's a made-up word that from the story, but I've borrowed it. And this is called Lethiometer. It was written for two friends who are extremely kind to me, Janet and Donna Tierney. I have one marble only, glass-curled greens and blue. It's kept inside a golden globe with turquoise studs. I swing it from a chain, my dowsing stone, my truth seer. Once it knocked against an ancient head, cracked it so its walnut core needs sepia images of a being lived inside another time, another age, before the image was replaced by the real, and the real was more than shadow. Outside the cave, I glassed the play of light and shadow, and when my only marble fell from its golden globe onto a blue-tiled ocean floor, I swam after. The ancient head, wise with age, told me he had too lost his. Recall the studs inside the coloured orb, their curled blues, their seedy core, his own two eyes. Lyrian days that left him sightless and a seer. My ancient friend dismissed the lies of a murmur seer, whose falsest claim is that to love someone is to dispossess him of his shadow, to wipe out every trace of him. Is this not indeed a murderous future? Our core belief that we are sworn to good and not extremes is not illusory. Those blue-eyed boys in ivory towers profess there is no truth, no self, nothing's real. The studs that breed such suasive tales are only there to fill the storybooks of our age. Along the furrows of my brow, I found a little pebble. It seemed an age since I'd lost my marble. This purple stone weighed but a fraction of a seer. It rattles in the golden glow, its hollow ring dislodging all the turquoise studs. In the desert of the real, we watch the sun expand and then contract my shadow. The ancient head is numb, though he is dead. We still talk. When the moon is blue and the sky is starry nights, we harvest all the fruits of happy thoughts and core them for their seeds. Is all speech deception, all meaning at its core inherently unsound? I asked the wise old head. He reached an age, he said, and no longer feared such things, was satisfied there were no blueprints, no master schemes. Simple truths apply. It does not take a seer to tell you that the darkest hour is just before the dawn. All of us are shadow dancing, but mustn't let the darkness intercept the light. The metal studs you riveted to the heart of my resolve are turquoise studs and reinforced solutions. I've made up two new molds, hollowed out their core for curled glass and colours of the universe, whose negatives and shadow graphs are images of beings lived inside another time, another age, before I was madder than unreason, and he mapped Inscape as a seer. And gladness had another view before betrayal, choked intentions blue. Talk on this blue-green sphere sets the lens within our glass-eye studs, through which the seer sees us stumble through the worth of words, in that core bewitchment of every age that cannot tell the real from dancing shadows. I had great friends when we were kids, but to join the gang you had to put your ear on the railway track and listen to the trains, and when you heard the train, then you showed bravery. But I had my ear to the track and the train was coming, and one of my friends kind of pushed me into the dike and saved me, but she wasn't so lucky. She was with her father and sisters, and they were in a car crash and they were all lost, and it was just, to a 7-8-year-old, it's incomprehensible that these people are no longer around. This is called wind turbines. Four silent angels on the mountain. They clamber up into the clouds, emerge, then disappear. But I know it's heaven moving, not them. Three armed angels wave at me, large, circular, three-handed motion, and I wave back. Magella always led the way, being the eldest. She looks back down at me and at her sisters following. When the other car stopped theirs, it broke them all except their dad. I never saw my friends again till four white boxes, different lengths, passed our door, and I cried into Grandma's apron. I don't know what this is about, but when I read it anyway, it's called Night Watch. Night Watch. Sheeting rain molds her grey hair to her skull. Her face and hands are pressed against the glass, forked tongue feasting on hoary winged bugs, wild eyes darting this way and that, searching for us inside the yellow gloom, screeching that she likes it, not in the end. While the ninny goat eats the bark from all the fruit trees and looks at her with his devil eyes, as though she is a night watchman doing his job. Okay, just two more and then I'm... Okay. Nightmare. A cobalt night in blue leaf and the hunt begins. The green grass black and the talking baby frightens me. Bug-eyed horrors hover in our shadows, lingering, carnivorous. Willing now to let him stay, he stumbles after the talking baby. Drop under the yickety-yackety picket fence. A treacherous fork in the road, I know well the dangers. Where I go, the baby follows. I urge him back to the black-green grass behind the yickety-yackety picket fence. He'll be safer there, I promise. He calls back under with pleas to follow. We neither saw the pit that he fell in velvet silence. A small hand held the edge that slipped away beneath my grip. A cobalt night in blue relief, and the hunt begins. This last one is called The Fall. Oh, she bared her soul all right. It fell from a star cloud rained by Canis Major. They knew it was authentic. It whimpered like an unknown set loose inside a crowd of urban predators, fierce curs and savage skeptics that roamed in packs. A few select gave shelter in the telling, wrapped the naked soul in their protection. made suspect Barb and Mr. Hauser in a harlequin, that masked and silenced looked like her, even wore her skin. But being undressed is like an honest thought. You cannot lie with dogs. It is a thing in itself, nothing more. The truth is beastly, but does not wag the tail. No, that is a subplot tellers invent when they call her a whore. And though her flesh is marked by canines, they strain to blame her first goal, judging original sin, her true shame.